The Big News Coming Soon podcast is proudly sponsored by BRB Homes. BRB Homes is Ireland's number one award-winning manufacturer of factory-built homes. We take your home from start to finish. Our homes are A-rated and meet planning regulations. We build to your requirements and your budget. The cost includes your home being turnkey and our chartered engineer's fees. Please get in touch for a viewing of our show homes, a brochure, or for more information. Let BRB Homes take the stress out of your build. Check out brbhomes.ie.
Hello and welcome to the Big News Coming Soon podcast. And this week we are coming to you live from County Galway in the gorgeous GK Media Studios just here in Ballybrit. And I'm delighted to be joined by a world famous man this morning.
Oh God almighty.
Mr. Steve-O Timothy.
Hello, hello, hello. Thank you for having me.
Thanks a million for coming in. I really appreciate it. It was a touch or go there for a while.
It was. Directions, Google Maps and Waze. I had like 17 apps open simultaneously trying to find the way. I was even going to ask people. But then I realised, sure.
No, we don't talk to people anymore.
Well, like, there's no Galway people in Galway. It's all Mayo immigrants. The great civil war of 1989, they all flooded over the border.
And we don't know where we're going.
Haven't a clue.
We only know where...
You can find Croke Park and the way home. That's about it.
And Supermax.
And Supermax,
that's
yeah.
That's about the height of it. Steve-O, for people who don't know you, or for the odd few people who have never heard of you, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Basically, I'd be self-described as a messer who filmed a sketch in his car 7 years ago, and then that's history.
You don't call yourself a comedian?
Not really, a sketch maker.
Isn't it funny? Isn't it funny how people on social media who create funny content are afraid to call themselves comedians?
Because we're not traditional comedians.
Because we don't write one-liners, is it?
Well, not one-liners, but traditional stand-up.
Yeah,
but I do that as well. But I'd call myself a comedian for that, but not for this.
All right. What age are you?
42.
And where are you from?
Westside Galway.
Westside Galway. Is that a...
Westside.
Is that a nice spot?
It is now.
Growing up, would it have been known as a...
Oh, it was a bit of joyriding and all that. Yeah.
Would Westside have been the kind of... the area of Galway where the Latchikos would have lived, the pups?
A few of them, yeah.
A few
yeah,
of them. More yeah. so than any other neighbourhood, or is there other neighbourhoods in
that
Galway?
It was just as bad as the rest of them, I suppose.
All right.
Yeah, it was. But I suppose we were feral back in them days anyway. Like, looking back at it now, like, you know, the things we got up to at, say, 11 and 12. If I seen 11, 12-year-old doing it now, I'd probably ring the HSE. You know what I mean? To get them taken into care, you know, that kind of way.
Give us an example then.
Ah, just smoking and things like that. Like, right. You know, in sixth class, smoking away.
No way.
Yeah.
Stop.
Yeah.
What was school like for you then?
School was grand. I went to school region, Shantala. Loved school. I was one of them, like, very neat people.
Yeah.
And very, like...
But you still strike me as a neat person. You're always wearing nice shirts. The car is always immaculate. The hair is well done this morning. You're still...
Jesus Christ, I barely rolled out of bed.
No, you still kind of take pride in yourself anyway.
But that's different, I suppose, to things that you have to do. If someone told me I had to do this, I probably wouldn't do it.
Okay.
I'm very much anti-authoritarianism. I just like... Yeah.
So then when you went into secondary school, how did things go?
Then it started off all good, you know, the new copy and you start the nice giant upwriting and the red and blue. But then within about 2 weeks into it, it was like...
X's and O's on the back of the copy.
I just didn't give a shit then.
Did you not?
I suppose I hit my puberty, whatever, and just, yeah, I didn't care for school anymore.
And was there any kind of defining moment or any defining episode that made you realise, right, I don't care about school anymore?
No, there wouldn't have been. Whatever hormones were going off in my brain just gradually over a 6 month period, I just like, fuck.
Anything got to do with the crowd you were in with or...
No, because it was the same crowd growing up. Yeah, right. So, yeah.
You just fell out of love with school?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you finish it?
No, got kicked out. Got expelled in the beginning of fourth year.
What'd you get expelled for?
Writing my name. Well, it was a gathering up of things.
I was going to say, writing your name now. Hang on. We're not getting the full story here.
Writing my name in big initials in the hall with a big black marker.
That
was the nail in the coffin.
That was the nail in the coffin. Yeah. So in the lead up to that then, what kind of antics were you getting
up to? Not going in. And
were you giving cheek?
Yeah. I was the funny bollocks. I was the clown.
You were the class clown.
Literally the class clown.
But there's two types of class clowns though. There's the class clown who can get away with it and there's the class clown who's a bit of a bollocks.
I was the class clown that could get away with it. I could push things. If anyone else done half the things I done, they would have been expelled that day.
Right.
Whereas me, it was just, oh, please, please. You know, they'd plead with me.
Yeah.
So I remember I used to, like, the school didn't have a phone number for the house, which we didn't have a phone anyway until I was in about third year. But yeah. They didn't have a phone number for the house. And I used to intercept the letters. So remember, what, like, my dad used to be asking me, like, how's school going? And I'd be like, ah, it's grand, typical Irish outflow. It's great now, you know, yeah. Blah, blah, blah. So then one day he eventually heard from whatever neighbour that there was a parent-teacher meeting and he had to go down to it. And he was asking me, is there anything I should be aware of? No. And I'm like, no, everything's grand. He came in the door after the parent-teacher meeting. And he was just like, he just turned to me and he swung around and he just goes, Jesus Christ, you could have warned me. It was like an ambush down there. And I was like, oh shit, I'm dead. I'm literally going to die now.
They had no idea whatsoever.
No, hadn't a clue. He knew I missed days and stuff, like, because I missed a good few days, in fairness. But, like, he didn't. So, like, sure, I remember when I got, the day I got expelled, the principal wanted to bring me home in the car, and I told him to fuck off, as was the style at the time. And I cycled home, and I stayed in the estate down from Horace Coogan Park, looking up, waiting for him to leave the house. And then I could see the old one for the next hour or two, prancing up and down the driveway, and I was like, nah, I'm sitting here, because the old fella... The old one was the disciplinarian. The old fella, you could
get around
him. You could
them.
Tailor him. Yeah. So.
And what did you do then after you left school then?
Done a FOSS course in machining. Then what did I do?
What's machining?
Machine tooling, like making machines. Cutting steel and designing things and stuff.
Here
like
in Galway?
That. Yeah. In the FOSS Centre.
I was in the FOSS Centre doing carpentry. That you grow up fast in there.
Yeah, you do.
That's a reality
check. I was breaking drill bits and everything. I was like...
Because lads in my class now, they'd screw your bag to the desk. Or they'd get your book that you're after paying €47 for and put five screws down through the middle of the desk. Welded to the desk. And you'd never get it out. But you did grow up fast there. Did you enjoy that?
Yeah, I enjoyed it, but I didn't have interest in it.
Hmm.
I wanted to do carpentry, but I couldn't get any spots in because it was around that time where Celtic Tiger nonsense was kicking in.
It was booming.
You had to be in like third year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you were starting off, you could barely get it. So I ended up, what did I end up doing then? Working in a kitchen for a while, washing dishes. The usual humdrum.
Was there always
jobs.
Work in you?
Kinda.
Were you into drinking and...
Yeah. Jeez, that
and anything stronger?
No. Like hash.
Yeah, okay.
Hash and drink. That was the... Sure, they were the things back in them days.
Right.
You know what I mean? A stronger thing, you'd be like, oh, Jesus, no. You know what I mean? Different these days.
But were they... Did your life revolve around them? Like, were you trying to get to the weekend so you could have a drink and a smoke or...
Yeah. And it gradually... It was a smoke first, then it became a drink. It kind of slowly replaced, like, the smoke, get a few cans. Then less of the smoke, get more cans. Then just cans will do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it wasn't just cans. It was like bottles, Buckfast bottles of vodka and stuff. Like,
but did you get up for work on Monday morning?
No, because I wasn't working then.
Okay.
I just didn't want to do anything then at that stage. I just...
As a result of the drinking and the smoking, or you just kind of...
I'd say a result of just a long succession of really shit jobs. Like when you're washing pots in a kitchen, you fall out of love pretty fast with work.
Yeah.
You just don't want to do it. So I decided then that I'd go back and do my leaving cert.
Really?
Yeah.
What age were you when you decided that?
19.
Wow.
But
that's huge, like.
Yeah, I suppose.
When you've left school for 2 or 3 years and you've fallen out of contact with the schoolmates and then you're saying, right, I'm going to go back now into a brand new class of people that I've no idea who they are.
Yeah, it was strange at the beginning because I remember someone said it to me, you should go back to school. And I was like, I don't come back to a classroom again. And they, no, you can do it with all the mature shit. And I was like, all right, that sounds promising. I'll give that a go.
So you could do it without going back to school?
Yeah. Oh, I would have never went back to school.
Okay, 19, I didn't know that.
Like, whatever, 19, 20-year-old sitting in the classroom, I just would have felt awkward.
Yeah.
Or was I? Yeah, it was around 19, 20, I think.
And how do you do it then without going back to school?
Mature student learning course, VITAS and things like that. They were the...
And did you finish it out? Did you do
No, because I broke my leg.
All right.
So and it was upstairs.
That was the end of that.
That was the end of that. And
all right. Well, 10 out of 10 for effort.
No, the principle is sound. And she said to me, like, you can come back in September and do the year, but you'll have to, like, you know, cram it in to a year.
Yeah.
Or you can start the following again. So I would have been 21 and do the 2 years. So I said, fuck it, I'll start at 21 again and do the 2 years, because I felt I needed that.
And what is it that made you want to go back and do the leaving cert? What did you need it for?
Just to say I'd done it, and just I liked academia, I suppose. I liked that side.
But there was nothing you wanted to go on and do that you kind of like said, I have to have a leaving cert?
Well, I wanted to go back to college, but I knew at that time I could go back to college instantly as a mature student. But I didn't want to go in defenseless.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I wanted to have a basic knowledge and a basic, like, I wanted to, like, my theirs, you know, I wanted to know how to write and know how to structure and stuff like that. Because I knew if I went back to college and I didn't have a clue and I could barely spell or, you know, structure a sentence or an essay, that then the pressure would be on me and there's more of a chance of me leaving. So I wanted to have.
So at that age, when you're 19, 20, 21, what was the ambition then?
Go back to college as a mature student and do psychology.
Wow. Where did that come from?
I don't know. I've always had an interest in psychology. I used to read psychology books and stuff growing up and stuff. So just, I had a weird, I was a bit of a geek.
Right.
But behind all the outwardly like messer fella, there was a geek there. Like I was into astrophysics and maths for my sins and things.
So
like
then
that.
At the age of 35, you discovered social media.
Yeah.
And started, yeah. And the very first Farmer Michael video then, was it a Farmer Michael video?
No, Farmer Martin. Didn't have a name down yet.
Farmer Martin.
Farmer Martin.
Where did that come from? Where did...
Just a kind of conglomeration of everyone I met growing up and friends' fathers from like Headford and Kong and that, you know what I mean?
Stay in Galway now. Don't come across the border. Don't come into Shrewl.
My people are from Mayo. So.
Are they?
Shaheen Clare Morris.
No way.
Yeah.
Ah, very good.
The old one. So the Outlaws people are from Roscommon. So.
Oh, God. Mayo and Roscommon. You had no hope. Is it any wonder you turned out the way you did?
Anyone would have hit the bottle. Jesus. Still trying to deal with who I am today. Like.
Do you remember the first video?
Yeah, it was basically myself and my brother talking in the car. And I was talking about my wife, Kathleen, and things at home and getting grants, EU grants and stuff for the farm and things like that. And kind of went well. And then a few weeks after I'd done the one of calling out Conor McGregor for stealing my style and my dickie ball. And that went all over the place. That was like kind of viral, I suppose you'd call it now. And yeah.
And then I'm sure all the comments were kind of like, oh, you're Conor McGregor from Wish and all this sort of stuff, no?
No, not really. It was all tagging people going, who does this remind you of? And
okay.
That kind of thing. So that was nice. Like, and then for the first year or two into it, everyone was trying to figure out, was I real and where I lived?
I know what you mean.
So they were all...
Was it a character or is he actually like that?
Yeah. Because... I'd done the song Fresh Prince of Ballinasloe. So everyone thought I was from Ballinasloe. So even Ballinasloe people going, he looks familiar, but I'm not sure where, you know, that. And it's like.
They were trying to track you down.
Yeah. And I kind of, I don't know if I should have broke character and came out as me or whether I should have just kept that going and left the mystery.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it's a bit too late now to do that, isn't it?
It's too late now. So Farmer Michael then was spawned from Farmer Martin.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's a huge worldwide success. It's fair to say.
Yeah, it's been weird.
You do gigs all over the world now.
Yeah, it's strange.
Like, more so abroad than in Ireland.
Yeah,
You're one of those phenomenons. You're like bigger in America than you are in Ireland. You're like Daniel O'Donnell.
Big in Germany as well, and Netherlands. It's weird. Okay. It's weird when you look at the stats, like there's weird countries popping up there.
Right.
But it's I suppose it's just mad because like people kind of laughed and said like it wouldn't even get outside of the west of Ireland, never mind go out to... You know,
and are you big with Germans or Irish people in Germany?
It's hard to know.
Okay.
Well, in England, it's like what
the diaspora.
It was at the beginning, and now it'd be native English, if that is a thing.
Yeah.
So there'd be very little.
Because you did a video driving past, was it Buckingham Palace in the car, and you were
the Houses of Parliament.
Was it?
Yeah.
And you were shouting and roaring, completely freaking out at Kathleen.
Yeah, because the 800 years they'll. The land of the enemy and all that. And
yeah.
It was funny because we were in Boston a few weeks back, the Wolf Tones were in the same pub as us. And the manager came in and he goes, the lads from Wolf Tones want to meet you. They were watching your videos there. And I was like,
wow.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Because I, like, we were hoping to get to meet. No, first of all, we were hoping to get tickets to go and watch them. And then I was saying to Roxy, wouldn't it be cool to meet them? And then they wanted to meet me. So it's little things like that. It's like, I've always said like this, you'll never get used to kind of famous people you grew up admiring messaging you on Twitter.
Yeah.
Or message, like Don French and things calling me a crazy Irish bastard and stuff and messaging me. It's just like, what the fuck? Am I actually in this world? You know, it's such a strange thing.
Yeah. And you know when you're driving past the Houses of Parliament and you're shouting and roaring, do you ever get any negativity from English people who don't know you yet? And
yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah.
I had famine. I had an experience last week actually where somebody was kind of, we had said
and they're ceaseless.
Yeah,
you know, they're just ceaseless. Like I've noticed a lot of people that, you know, if they take a dislike into you, they won't just like write a comment on Instagram. It'll be Facebook, and they'll message you, and they'll email you, and they'll go to everything.
Yeah.
And it's like, Jesus Christ, like if you put a bit of effort into doing something like positive, you know.
Yeah.
But a lot of them are in denial about what the British done in Ireland over the years.
Isn't it incredible, like, how, you know, my mother grew up in Derry, so I'm very familiar with the Troubles, and, you know, I've actually been caught in a couple of riots when I was younger, like, Jesus. You know, before I was 12, 13 years of age, in the Troubles in Derry. So, like, I'm very aware of what happened and the repercussions and all the different things that have come after it. But we would still kind of jokingly talk about the tans.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah, yeah.
You know, like, it's not deep-rooted anger or hatred in us anymore.
No, it's a joke. It's like the Galway Mayo football thing.
Yeah.
It's like, we don't hate each other.
So we might say something like...
Like, Galway Mayo fans, when was the last time they had a big riot and ended up slapping the faces of each other at a GAA match?
Never, ever.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a similar thing, but the English don't seem to get that, and they violently react.
Yeah.
Because they're, you know, obviously... Germany done its thing and the guilt, and they're taught about it. The Brits still have a rosy, romantic thing of empire. They brought civilization to the world.
Yeah.
There wasn't massacres and genocides and Churchill was a hero. You know, they're not taught about anything beyond their own borders.
I have a wingman, Donald Byrne, and we did a podcast on a cruise and we were talking about this lady from England, and he said she was from Tanland. Do you know? And he just throws it out there.
Yeah,
like, he doesn't mean any harm in it. There's no badness in it. He doesn't have any sort of hatred towards the English.
Exactly, exactly.
But a lady did take exception to it and just said she wouldn't be tuning in again because of his attitude towards the British people.
Well, you're only right to lose that listener.
You
reap what you sow.
I shall no longer be tuning in to your podcast.
Yeah, I love when people say that, like, I'm not watching your videos anymore because that one was disgusting. So I always reply, so right, that one was disgusting, but you don't mind the homophobic ones, the racist ones, the sexism, that they were grand, but this one is where you draw the line, because a lot of people will only, every other video is funny you've done, but this one that affects me personally, that's not funny.
Yeah.
I can laugh at everyone else's misfortune, but that one, because I know someone who has that or blah 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 or someone close to me, then that's drawn the line.
Okay.
But let's laugh at everyone else.
You
know what I mean? It's very hypocritical.
Who's the most famous person in your phone book then?
I don't know.
Who's the most famous person you've had?
To me, it'd be Seamus Coleman, the captain of their Irish football team in Everton.
Yeah.
Because that, like, I'm an Everton fan. And
he's your hero.
And Paul McGrath, I suppose. And I'm trying to think.
Who's the most famous person that has reached out to you then? Don French.
Probably Don French, yeah. I'd say so, yeah. A few other people that... Freddie Flintoff and...
Really?
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Freddie Flintoff.
Gary Lineker. Footballer from the...
Class.
90s.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think who else. Just a lot of ones like that. As an Everton fan, they'd be big, like Neville Southall and people like that. People that...
So what some people might not know then is you're disabled.
I am a cripple.
Yeah.
And people get awful, like, squeamish when I use that word.
A cripple?
Yeah.
Well,
they hate that. They just hate it.
Right. Well, I'm not going there, but I guess you're allowed to say you're allowed.
Yeah, it's But I've always said to people, like, if you take back the word and use it, then it strips it of its power.
Right.
Like, you know, the gay community with queer and black people with the N-word, obviously. So, like, if you take that word back, it strips it of its power.
Mm. We're not allowed to say handicapped.
You can and you can't. It depends on... See, we use it in a kind of a... Agway, old handicap. You know what I mean? So in America,
mean?
They wouldn't.
Oh, yeah.
So it's okay to say he's handicapped.
Well, like, just growing up, I would have called it a handicap spot.
Yeah,
but
disabled
now,
parking.
Now it's disabled parking.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I suppose the moral zeitgeist changes. We language changes. Like, you wouldn't say invalid either anymore. You know what I mean? Because basically that comes from invalid. Like, you're not a whole person.
Yeah.
So, you know, and the same with, like, you know, insane and things like that, even though we still use it, but we don't use it in a technical psychiatry sense. You
yeah.
know what I mean?
Well, you're around the world, you're doing your shows, you have a lovely car, you love cars.
Yeah,
I met you on the Bumblebee a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
You were driving a BMW...
i8.
What do you have now?
An M4.
Unbelievable.
I like the i8, but it was that January, the 8-year manufacturer's battery warranty would have been up. And I wasn't taking any chances.
Right.
Because if that battery goes like 20 odd grand, I was like, no, that's been traded in straight away.
But my point here is that you're very active and you're touring the world and you're doing shows and you've got your lovely cars, but you're very, very, very disabled.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like you find it
I'm almost like, am I that bad?
No, but I'm just trying to put it into context. Like, you know, you walk with crutches, but you have to walk very, very, very slowly.
Yeah, yeah. I'd have limited movement from the upper chest down and very limited sensation.
And do you have a wheelchair?
Yeah, it's in the car.
Okay.
So that's why I asked you, is there disabled parking? Because I can't walk there.
Yeah.
So if I probably would have had to bring the wheelchair if it was any further than it was here and out.
And even little things I noticed coming in here today, like, you know, outward facing doors are very difficult. I get why they're outward swinging, because if there's a fire, everyone has to push them out the
way.
But for you getting into a building, it's very difficult.
And springy doors. Doors that spring back, very like stiff doors. And once you open them, then they're just like bounce back in you.
These are all fire safe doors, but they're very...
Yeah. And just the basic things that everyone takes for granted. Holding something in your hand while you walk, that's a no anymore.
Because I do quite a bit of travelling, and you know, I'd be off in different hotels, and I was on a cruise there recently, and a lot of people were asking me, was it disabled friendly?
Yeah.
And I said, I hate answering that question.
Because
there was a disabled toilet, but there might have been a step up into it or a step somewhere that could have been very difficult for people getting on and off.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you're like your man that told me this was disabled friendly. But I wouldn't notice that little step because it's not in my, you know.
Exactly. Because you hop up that step so unthinkingly.
Yeah, but that step would be the difference in you having a very difficult day, like.
Yeah, yeah. If I brought the wheelchair, obviously.
Yeah.
I could manage one step, I suppose. You get trained up in the rehab hospital to kind of do obstacles.
In general, how do you find buildings and how do you find places?
See, I'm all right because I have a small wheelchair. I've a kind of a very stripped back wheelchair. So I'm grand, but like, I think of my old one who was in a wheelchair, or my old flat, and they have the kind of hospital, the Western Health Board kind of wheelchair, you know?
Yeah.
And I think how hard it would be for them being out and about. Yeah, so it's funny when you think about it, three of us ended up in fucking wheelchairs in the house. Like,
really?
You know what I mean? Yeah, yeah. From different reasons. Spinal injury, Parkinson's and Alzheimer's. So.
No way.
Yeah.
So. And do you still live at home?
Next door to the Aufla.
Oh, you're close enough. So.
Yeah.
How did your injury happen then? Can we talk about that?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I was... come full circle, I was celebrating my last exam when I went back when I was 21 to do the Leaving Cert. So I was 23. I was finishing the 2 years, obviously, done the exams. I think it was a Thursday or Friday, if I remember correctly, and went out drinking, as I would, to celebrate it. We were in my house with a few of the lads. I ran out of drink. Pure normal at that time, get on the bike, get a few cans.
Bicycle or motorbike?
Motorbike. Hop on the bike, get a few cans and head home again. But I met a few people I knew, pulled up on the bike, stayed there for longer than I intended, pissed, got on the bike, went up the other side of town, crashed.
drunk out of your mind?
Yeah, absolutely hammered.
How fast were you going, would you say?
Don't know. Wouldn't have a clue.
Right. So what happened then after that? Were you unconscious?
I was kind of in and out of consciousness. And
did you hit a wall or what did you hit?
Right? Kind of hit a warning sign. It's the corner up at Thermo King.
Okay.
So there was a kind of, you know, those black and orange.
Yeah.
Them, and there was a telegraph pole, and then there was kind of wooden posts near a little park. So, yeah, so.
Wow. And had you anyone with you?
John, a friend of mine, was on the back.
And what's your memories then of that? Like, do you remember being there at the side of the road, or do you just remember waking up in a hospital?
I remember waking up in hospital. I remember before it, chatting to him down near Merview Church, and then waking up in hospital. And that's kind of just to everyone there. And my friend bringing me in flowers, and I was like, I'm not fucking dead yet, you know. And just, you have this kind of weird things like that stand out to you. And then the outfla being pure emotional, and I was like, sure, look, if I end up in a wheelchair, as long as I have nice mag wheels, it'll be fine. I was still trying to like calm them down, you know what I mean? And I remember saying to the outfla then, like, because I had damaged two bones in my neck, the C2 and the C7, and I remember saying to the outfla, look, if I lose power in my hands, you're bringing me tablets. And he goes, look, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. So,
what was the extent of the damage then on your body?
Spinal injury, so neck, back, leg, ankle, collarbones, things like that. But it's the spinal injury that's the one. The other bones are, they heal. They're minor things. Like,
right.
I've broken plenty of bones in my life, but.
And you were down then in Castlebar giving a talk last week to 1600 transition years.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, fair play to you, because it takes a story like yours, I think, to get through to them.
Well, I think it's. See, we all, I know it's stupid to say, because the victims are the most important part, but we never hear the point of view from the culprit, the idiot that actually did it.
So for people who don't know, unfortunately, John didn't make it.
John died, yeah, a week and a half later after the accident.
And, you know, how do you... I just find it so fascinating, Stephen, that you're able to talk about it, that you're able to go, like, I find it fascinating, and I'm also very, you know, impressed by you. And impressed is it's probably not even the right word, because I'd be going for the tablets.
I suppose you just kind of, you think to yourself after years of just, after it, and since it happened, like, it's 2005 now, and you stew a lot about it, and you kind of think to yourself, I'm not going to do any good or have a positive effect on anyone's, you know, a change of mindset or change of actions in regard to this if I stay quiet and say nothing. And it's really strange then at times you get people online saying you're only talking about this for likes and stuff, and you're like, do you understand how social media works?
Yeah.
I can think of 800 trillion billion things that's better to get likes than admitting you killed your friend in a drink driving crash. Like, it's, if you wanted to destroy your social media, you tell people that.
Yeah.
You know,
no, 100%. We'll come back to the social media thing in a minute. But I'm thinking, I was 16, 17. I had a motorbike. I was in school. And I remember when I had the motorbike, I thought I was invincible. I remember driving to Westport as fast as I could, thinking, this is great crack.
Yeah.
And completely invincible. And then, you know, you're only young. Like, it's madness to think you can have a motorbike that can do 100 miles an hour.
I know,
at 17 years of age. Well, we could back then anyway. I don't know what the system is now.
And it's instantaneous power as well.
Yeah.
They're so light. Like, the most basic bike will outrun a Lamborghini.
And you have no experience of car doors, dogs running out on the road, postmen flying in and out of houses.
Yeah. You just apply for your provisioning. No test, no nothing.
Yeah.
Thrown on a bike, there you go.
So it is scary from that regard. Now, my dad was into motorbikes as well, and, you know, I used to go off with him on the back of bikes and stuff like that. So I wouldn't say that I was experienced, but I had some level of awareness of other drivers. And I think the thing that motorbike drivers have to be most aware of is everyone else.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, there's so many blind
spots.
Cars
not seen you.
Yeah.
It's just constant cars not seen you.
So then, like, was there a big court case then? And like, was this hanging over you for years?
Yeah, it was a while going to court and book of evidence not ready and kind of stuff like that.
So were you prosecuted then for dangerous driving?
Dangerous driving causing death.
Right. And how long did this go on for?
Jeez, I'd say about 2 years, I'd say.
It's a long time to have.
Yeah. Well, I kind of, you know, at that time you don't care. You're like, yeah, so be it. Like,
right.
You don't go, oh no, poor me. You know what I mean?
I understand. And what was your relationship with John's family?
Good. Which was strange, and it's even weird to say now. But I was talking to them that day outside court and everything, and John's sister came over to England to visit me and everything, and they were like wishing me well and hoping that everything was grand and all that. So it was so weird to me because I considered, like, you know, that I obviously drink driving and killed him. They were like, well, he was older than you. He shouldn't have went on the bike. You were together.
You feel like you took John away from them?
Yeah, yeah. Because as a biker, you're responsible for your pillion passenger. So I let him down in ensuring his safety.
But you think from their point of view they were understanding and they said he knew what he was getting into?
Yeah, yeah. But
that's incredible.
Thomas, John's son, still says to this day, will you stop? Well, yeah, you know, cop on to yourself. You know what I mean? And I'm like, see it from my point of view. I'm arguing with his son to, you know, it's strange. But they've been great. They've been unbelievable.
You're really lucky that you have that relationship with them.
Oh, and yeah,
that
of course.
That understanding.
Well, I wouldn't feel comfortable doing what I'm doing now without them because I'd feel like I'm bringing it up without their knowledge and blessing. You know what I mean?
They sound like amazing people.
Yeah, yeah.
So you go then from, what happened? What was the outcome of the court case?
2 years suspended sentence for 4 years, I think it was. Keep the peace kind of job and not coming in front of the courts again, I suppose. So
you were lucky to avoid jail, were you?
That day I felt unlucky that I wasn't in jail.
Why? You felt like you had to do your time?
Yeah, I felt like I was kind of ready. I had a bag and everything with my meds because the barrister said go home and get your meds and get clothes just in case. And I remember the judge going 2 years and then he went back to his chambers and left it on tenterhooks. And I remember people going, it was like the fall of the Ted moment. Everyone's going, fucking hell.
Yeah, you know, there was a big gasp and then one fella down the back.
Yeah, people were more upset about it than me. I was like, yeah, that sound.
They were upset that you got 2 years.
Yeah.
But then he suspended it.
Yeah, yeah. So I was kind of like at that point in your life, nothing scares you anymore. Nothing scares you. You've been through the worst nightmare that you've done to yourself. So, like, jail is going to be an absolute just, that'll be easy. I'm not in much pain anymore. I was in hospital where I couldn't move. I was in constant pain. I had a man's death on my conscience. Like, jail will be easy. Anything is easy after something like that. Life is pretty much easy after something like that. I can stand up. Most people that were in my kind of accident and had my kind of injury would give everything they have just to be able to stand up out of the wheelchair, which I can do.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm the luckiest bollocks in the world as well as the unluckiest bollocks in the world.
Did you feel like going to jail for a while would kind of give you a bit of closure?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I would have felt like I got my punishment. But the judge said that your punishment is your injury, and he said there'd be no point in sending me to jail. He said he'd rather me out there as a physical and like manifestation of what can go wrong when you drink drive. So
how did it come about then that you started, I guess the social media took off and then the motivational, you know, I call it motivational speaking because it is, but it's not your traditional motivational speaking, I guess.
Yeah.
How did that come along? Were you just approached by a couple of schools?
Just approached by people, yeah. Never, like,
but you didn't seek it?
No, no, no.
I've never really
sought anything in this kind of game. You just go along with the flow, don't you?
Mm.
You know what I mean? You let things happen organically and, yeah, I suppose you try your best to my seeking is looking for venues. That's my seeking. And
so your venue last week was the TF Royal Theatre in Castlebar, where you're speaking to 1600 transition years.
Yeah.
What did you tell them?
I just told them my story. 10 minutes. I think it was 10 minutes. I said I was given 10. I said of about 6. And your man rang me, the last day, Noel from AXA, who do the Road Safe, Road Aware course. And he was on about that if you had shown me your script with that amount of curses in it beforehand, I wouldn't have let you do. I wouldn't have let you do it. But he goes, next time, I would give it a blessing. Because I always say, even when I'm on telly or radio or whatever, I always say, are you allowed to curse? No, but can I have one fuck? Because I feel like a well-placed fuck gets a message across so astutely to a certain demographic. Because you're speaking like they speak.
Yeah.
You know, I had a poo-poo of a time when I crashed a motorbike. Like, I destroyed my life. I fucking destroyed my life. There's more oomph in that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easier, and I find it more hard-hitting to curse the odd time. And I probably do it too much. And it's funny then to know, because I said to him, like, I don't really even curse that much in real life.
In real life, yeah. Yeah.
B&B Homes make your dream home a reality. We do it all from start to finish. Your one-stop shop to becoming a homeowner. Log on to brbhomes.ie.
Do you ever have down days? Do you ever
Yeah, of course, yeah. The lads will be kicking around a ball and I'm uncomfortable sitting on a wall because my hip is starting to get sore, my knee is starting to get sore, and my bum is starting to get sore and getting pains in my neck. And you're just watching them, and I used to love playing soccer, and you're just like, yeah, I wish I wasn't here anymore. I wish I'd just bang, gone with the crash and skipped away.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously. And like I used to go mountain climbing back in Connemara and cycling to Clifton and stuff. And then when you go from that to being afraid of a wet leaf on the ground, you kind of, your masculinity is kind of sucked from you, and you're now a helpless, hopeless creature when you were a pretty active 23-year-old. Now you're like, oh, give us a hand.
What's your most challenging task?
My most challenging task?
You know, you were saying there that people take for granted walking along with something in their hand, but like, even what's the most challenging thing you find in a day-to-day basis?
Everything. Sitting here now is sore.
Really?
Just life is sore, I suppose. Everything. Going to sleep then is not an escape from it then, because I start getting pain in my hip and I get spasms then, so it constantly wakes me up during the night. It's like the injury going, like, I'm still fucking here, I'm not going to let you sleep. So yeah, it's kind of constantly there. You can never move, I suppose you can never move past it, if you could ever move past it in the first place, but it would have been probably easier if I like didn't have the injury I'm having. But every morning I wake up, or if I sleep, and
so
it's there.
In a way, you got a life sentence.
Yeah, but I also got life.
Yeah.
So
it's 6 of 1 and a half a dozen of another.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's come back then to the social media and the live shows. How did the first live show come about? Because I'll tell you my story. I fell into this. I didn't plan on any of this to happen. And I was booking a venue in a hotel for 130 people, thinking, what if they don't show up?
Yeah.
And I was down at the venue and I said, can you fill this room with tables if only 40 people buy
tickets? Yeah.
And then the venue...
I get 20, it'll cover costs.
Yeah. And then the venue cancelled on me and I moved to a bigger venue in Castlebar. And the aim was to sell 500 tickets and we ended up selling 2,000.
Yeah.
So I went from worried about selling 20 tickets to selling 2,000 tickets. And that's how I fell into it by mistake.
Yeah.
So what's your story?
When I was doing it was about 2-3 years into doing the sketches, and I'd constant messages and emails from people asking would I do it, and I was like, get the fuck away from me.
And in your head you're saying, like, how is this a live show?
Yeah.
Pay to come and see this?
I was still embarrassed by it at that stage. I was like, I am not doing this in front of people. Like, even to this day, when people listen to it or have it playing around me, I'm very, very put off by it.
I'm exactly the same.
And people go like, oh, they said you're famous. What do you do? And I'm like, don't watch the videos. Don't watch the videos. Don't watch the videos.
Yeah.
And I get iffy as well when people are kind of around the car and they, you know that they've noticed you and you know that they want to come back and ask for a selfie, but they're hanging around and you're just there, please just ask me, please, my anxiety, just ask me.
Isn't it a tricky one? Because you want them to ask you and you just want to get that over and done with. But you don't want to ask them. You don't want to say, hey, do you want a photo?
Yeah, because that looks cocky.
Because you sound like a gobshite. Yeah.
Do you want to get a photo of me?
But sometimes the majority of them are nearly waiting for you to engage.
Yeah.
But you can't do it.
Yeah.
And there's this awkwardness for 2 or 3
sometimes
minutes.
Sometimes eye contact is enough.
I get that in queues a lot. So if I'm in a queue and there'd be somebody in front of me, there was a guy in front of me last week. We were at a deli counter and every now and again he'd kind of look and he'd look at me. And then I'm kind of self-conscious because I have these kind of marks around my eyes and I have a few things that are annoying me lately. And I just get self-conscious going, why is he looking at me?
Yeah.
The last thing I think is maybe he's seen one of my videos. I just start thinking, do you know, is he looking at me because of this or have I something on my face? Or have
I ride that bollocks' wife?
No, well, it's I'm safe there. I definitely know it's not that. I keep my nose clean with wives, that's for sure. But then 2 or 3 minutes in, he'll say something like this. This guy last week goes, myself and the wife enjoyed the cruise. I was on this cruise with Donald Byrne. And then suddenly it's like, ah, geez, how are you getting on? How are things? Thanks
and
a million.
It's a relief then.
Such a relief.
It's an innocent thing.
And then you just start chatting away.
Yeah. But I tend to, when I'm in a place, I don't tend to make eye contact and I don't look at drivers anymore either. So I tend to never look into
other cars.
Another car.
Right.
Because I'm so used to and I tend not to listen as well because you'll get faggot, handicapped bastard being worn from a car or
what?
People sticking up their fingers and things like that. Yeah, it's constant. Like I can't go out to clubs or pubs anymore. That's a no-no at night. Because someone will come over, there's the handicapper. Someone will just start. Because they think you are the character or that they're just, this is just, I don't know, they must.
What's that about though? I have a similar story. I did a show in Sligo in
the Gala Vogue.
No. It was in a hotel. It was in a hotel in Sligo. And I get them mixed up. The Clayton and the Clarion. The Clayton, I think. The one that used to be the psychiatric hospital. The Clayton.
It still is.
So I was doing this show anyway. And we had a great night. And then we all went in for a late drink. And then I had a few kind of goodie bags and people had dropped stuff off. So this was at 2 o'clock in the morning. I was dropping this stuff out to the car. So I said, I'll throw it out to the car now and it'll be there and one less job to do in the morning. And as I was walking out to the car, this taxi pulled up with 4 lads in it. And one of the lads goes, oh, there's Alan Clark. How are you, Alan Clark? Alan Clark, I follow you and I love this video and I love that video, right? And he asked me for a selfie and he was my biggest fan. And he couldn't say enough about me. The other 4 lads were like, who's this bollocks? Who's this fella? You know, and this is Alan Clark. He's from the internet. And he's David Cuddy's friend or he's such a one's friend, you know. So the other 3 lads didn't care. And that was fine. They walked off. And it wasn't as if they were rude or anything. They just didn't know. They had no heed on me.
Yeah.
So went out to the car, dropped the stuff off at the car, came back into reception. There was 3 ladies in reception. When I walked into reception, the 3 ladies then were all like, there's Alan Clark, blah, blah, blah. How are you getting on? Because they were at the show. I don't get this reaction everywhere I go. It's just that they happen to be at the show. So then the ladies then were like, Alan, can we get a photo? Can we get a selfie? Blah, blah, blah. The man that was at the front door telling me I'm the best thing since sliced bread came over into the middle of it and goes, who's this fucking prick? Who's this prick? What are you wanting pictures with that wanker for?
Yeah.
And then he takes his phone out and starts videoing me, calling me a prick. And I just going, hang on now a second.
Yeah.
90 seconds ago, you told me at the front door that I was a legend and now I'm a prick because there's 3 ladies here.
Yeah, that's because he was asking you for a selfie. Now he's seen other people and your popularity, so he can't stand that. Some people can't stand that. Someone else would want a photo with you.
He's one of the first people I stood up to.
Mm.
You know, I'm only doing this a couple of years, but he's one of the first people that I said, hey, dickhead, you were at the front door there telling me I was the best thing since sliced bread 10 seconds ago. So go and fuck yourself.
Yeah.
And, you know, the 3 women started laughing and then he did this kind of awkward laugh. But it blows my mind how. And I've often said this on other podcasts. I can't stay out after 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
Whatever happens after 1 o'clock, fellas in particular turn into complete assholes.
Yeah.
Don't they?
Yeah. And I find it fascinating as well then, because like if I stay out, like you said, after 1, or I tend to go out about 11.
Yeah.
But you're a fella that's disabled in a wheelchair and it's still starting you. You know, it's
in what
it's
sense
weird.
Are they starting? Are they just looking for a reaction from you? Are they looking for you to flip a gasket? Or
it's, I don't mind the people that come over. I can't stand with you or whatever. Okay, like I, you get kind of used to that. It's the people that speak under their breath, horrible stuff. That's the worst, because it's almost like they want you to hear, or they don't think you can hear. Because like I'm an anxious person, so I'm talking to four people at a table. I can hear these people
hear the conversation
because
behind
you're always, yeah, because you're always looking for danger when you're an anxious person. So like you hear it, like, and you hear these things, and you're kind of like why? What did I ever do in my life to deserve this? And you sometimes you just feel like deleting all your social media and not doing it anymore because you're like, why would someone say something like that? Like what have I? Like, if I'd done something personally to you, like, sometimes you could only gauge the reaction if I had shot their father. It's that severe. The hatred. Like, they want you to kill yourself. Like, go home and kill yourself, you handicapped, crippled bastard. They want you dead because you do videos online. And it's that severe with some people.
For people who don't know then about the videos, is it the content? Like, what's the content of the videos?
No, it's just because you're online.
It's nothing to do with the content. You're not on
their friends watch your videos. Their mother, their auntie, their granny likes your videos.
But you're not one of these people that's on talking about anti, you're not transphobic, or you're not kind of touching on any of these topics at the minute that are...
They'd probably like you if I was.
Right.
Because some of them would be that way inclined.
Yeah. But your content is fairly...
Well, it's like, yeah, a lot of people say it's controversial. It's not. I'm playing a character, like. He's the butt of the joke. Michael is the butt of the joke.
But do you feel like you can get away with stuff?
Oh, yeah, because you're doing a character, obviously.
But do you use that as an excuse for yourself? Do you say, oh, but you're only a character? That's not racist.
I do, but if I'm ever doing one about along racial lines, I will tend to do it very satirical and, like, take the opinions of the opposition and make them so ridiculous as to be, you know, surreal.
Have you ever crossed the line? Have you ever thought, right, I shouldn't have done that?
I suppose the one that I feared would get me in all sorts of shit, but I still had to do it, was Down syndrome people can be cunts too. And I had to do that. Where Michael was, he failed his leaving cert and he was jealous of his cousin that has Down syndrome that got a very good result. And the whole emphasis of the video, and the title, as you can imagine, controversial as it may sound, is that they're human like us and they can be nice and not. You know, and I got a letter, or I got an email from Down Syndrome Galway that invited me to their coffee morning and stuff, and loads of people are tagging people that had Down Syndrome kids and tagging, and I was like, oh, thank God that didn't, because you're so worried it'd get misconstrued.
Did you go to the Down Syndrome morning?
No, I couldn't. I was doing a show.
Okay.
I was doing a show that night, so I couldn't, but... That was nice, because you're worried, like, and you know, I could, like, I've always said it going back years, I could have went down the safe route and I'd have more followers now and I'd be doing more stuff. But then, like, I'm a firm believer, if you have a fucking platform and you don't use it, you are morally bankrupt. If you don't speak about things that you personally believe, like gay rights and anti-racism and stuff like that, just for money, then you're a morally bankrupt scumbag, basically. You have a platform, use it. If you're only using your platform for personal wealth, then you're a shill, and you're self-defeating your own moral views. So why exist and why do what you do if you're not going to do that? And you might say, I'm shooting myself in the foot. Well, so be it. I'd rather be on the dole and know my morals are intact than be getting, you know, endorsements from this brand and this brand because I play it safe to make other people happy. Then you're not making you happy. You're making them happy.
What is your content an outlet for you?
It can be and it can't be. Sometimes, let's be honest, they're just brutal tidy humour. There's no message in it or anything. It's just something I come up.
Do you feel compelled to upload a particular video at a particular time? Do you say, right, I have to get one done because I haven't done it in the last 3 days?
Yeah, you always do. Sure, the pressure is immense. Like, and you know, the latest video you put up only got 50,000 views, and you feel like killing yourself and deleting all your social media because you're under immense pressure. Because you know from doing it, you get a high when the likes and comments start coming in. When they don't, you feel dreadful.
How many followers do you have on all of your platforms, roughly?
All together, like?
Yeah.
I don't know, 1.2 million or something like that. So,
around that. What's your main platform?
Facebook.
Facebook?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, Facebook is kind of where it started. And
do you think
YouTube is my second, which is strange because it's easy to... Well, it's hard enough to get people to watch your YouTube. To get people to subscribe to your channel, which costs nothing, is so hard.
Yeah.
It is so hard. Even to this day, to be floating from 85 to 90% non-subscribers that watch. But to get them people just to click subscribe is impossible.
Do you think Facebook is your most popular platform because people are very quick to comment on it and it drives the engagement up? I find older people, like over the age of 40, are very quick to comment.
Yeah.
And very quick to be vocal and abusive on Facebook.
Yeah. They tend to be at home a lot.
Yeah. Hasn't it gone, like, in the last 10 years from this kind of... Facebook was seen as the lovely social media platform.
Yeah, yeah.
And now it's gone.
And when they changed the algorithm as well, like, you remember years ago, there was an actual timeline. So you'd log on to Facebook in the morning, it went from 11:59 to 11:58, and every page you liked would be there in that.
Yeah.
But now you're shown to maybe 5 to 10% of your followers.
Right.
But, like, I remember back in the days on Facebook, like, you'd upload a video and within... say 35 seconds, you're 4,000 likes and there's going on 2,000-3,000 comments. It was just straight away. Now, like, Facebook video is dead now. Like, reels are the thing. You upload a normal old style video, it's gone. Reels are the thing now.
You have to upload a reel to Facebook.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Reels are the thing now. Like.
Yeah.
Even putting a native video on Instagram as well. They want you reels. Because they want to compete with.
So you don't do many TikTok shows in Ireland then?
Oh, well, I do. Like, I wouldn't say I wouldn't. But, like, I suppose the UK is a different kind of world as well. Like, the UK, it's weird. Like, when I first went over there and done shows in Liverpool and stuff, I had a lot of people... Like, I've never experienced this in Ireland. I don't think I ever will. There was a lot of people, and in the States as well, that had come over to you and go, I don't like your videos at all, but fair play to you for doing them. You wouldn't get that in Ireland.
No.
If they don't find the character funny or your videos, then they hate you as a human being and they can't be persuaded otherwise. Oh, but he does a lot of good. No, I don't. Like, his videos aren't funny. He doesn't deserve to live. His videos aren't funny. I'm going to harass him in the street because I don't like his videos. I don't think I've ever in my life came across a Facebook video, watch it, not find it funny, and then write a lot of death threats about the person. Like, it's like, but I suppose then it goes back to the old adage, like, hurt people. They're not happy in their lives. You can't be happy. If you're constantly harassing people online, you're not a happy person, are you?
There's a lot of begrudgery in Ireland.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it goes back to, I suppose, the fella that was doing well historically in Ireland was the fella that was going along with the Brits.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The fella that was raising his head above the parapet was up to something.
He took the soup.
You know what I mean? There's a reason that cunt has that now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or it's a claim. It's a claim. He must have got a claim. A lot of people think that as well about my accident. Jeez, you must have got a claim. And you're like...
So you're saying people in England then are much more understanding and more open-minded?
Yeah, there's a kind of sliding scale. Ireland is at number one. America is at 10 in the positivity.
So in Ireland, it's black or white. We either like you or we hate you.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no middle.
No.
There's no middle ground.
And there's no persuading, which is the worst thing. Well, I suppose when I went on the Late Late Show, a lot of people kind of go, all right, I don't mind you now. And it's like, thanks.
Yeah. But I saw you on the Late Late Show. You're not as much of a wanker as I thought you were.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah.
But I suppose it's weird, kind of another aspect of that is then people that, when I speak out about the accident and stuff, well, it wasn't an accident. There's no such thing as an accident. There's incidents. There's always a cause. There's no effect without cause. So, but I suppose it's just Irish terminology that we say it was an accident, I suppose. But when I talk about that and the people that get, like, obsessed with that and create hundreds of fake TikToks and stuff, just write murderer, 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 murderer constantly. It's every day, but you get used to it. But It's the people that say to you, I wouldn't give you forgiveness. I don't forgive you. It's like, it's not yours to grant.
Yeah.
It was the Laffey family and they did. Like, what the fuck do I want your forgiveness for?
I've said this actually a few times. Irish people are very quick to own other people's grief.
Yeah.
Aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, somebody might die in Monaghan and it might be a tragic circumstance and maybe they're very young and then suddenly they own that grief.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're organising a vigil in Gartagani for somebody that they don't know.
And getting
they've never met.
Yeah.
And they're inviting you to it and then suddenly you're public enemy number one because you're not going to it.
Yeah, yeah. It's a strange thing. It's kind of like...
Or often I would get, say, and I'm just using this crazy example where somebody was killed by a mug flying through the air and hit them in the head and they died. And then I come on my page that evening and I drink a cup of tea out of a mug and somebody goes, Alan, are you drinking tea out of a mug this evening?
Yeah, yeah. And you're like...
Because Dermot was killed by a mug.
And you're like, I didn't know this. Like,
I don't know Dermot. Yeah, I don't know anything about the story.
It's like I walk up to a load of emails one day and loads of messages and texts from the lads and everything. Because a fella that went to a show that we'd done in Monaghan 3 years previously was being charged for paedophilia. And they were sharing the picture that he got of
you and him together
after the show.
So you're a paedophile.
A friend of yours, yeah?
Oh, so suddenly you were on the island with Jeffrey Epstein.
Yeah,
then.
Yeah, because I'd done a show and he was a fan that came to see the show and paid to get a picture afterwards. And it's like, are you for real? Like, all right, if I was from Monaghan and I hung around with him, then so be it. Like, it's deserved. But like, I live in Galway, I do shows. You know me. You're commenting on my page, so you know what I do.
Mm.
But you can't take that leap of imagination that, oh, maybe he got a picture after the show.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If that was my friend, I would have stabbed him myself. You know what I mean?
Oh, stop. Stop that now. You definitely wouldn't do that.
Oh, I would if he was a paedophile. Jesus.
We're not condoning violence.
I always condone violence, Alan. Some people just need a swift thump in the mouth sometimes. Let's be honest. No, I don't mean that.
I've never publicly called anyone out yet.
I do, yeah. But because it's some of the stuff I get, it's just, you've probably noticed that my stories, like some of it is just fucking, you know, you just like, fuck it. Like, because, and the funny thing is, you'll message them back or you'll write under the comment and go, I'll always do it. And people laugh at it because they go like, he doesn't know what he's in for. I'm like, just say sorry now. Because by tomorrow, you'll be emailing me an apology. And they always will. Please take that down. Please take. And it's like, you know, why did you do it?
Yeah.
Like, I told you I would do this. Like, people know me for doing it now. So just don't bother doing it.
What did you learn?
Yeah, exactly. Like,
tell me about the positives then of social media. Then we've been talking about the negatives for so long. What are the positives?
The 99% of messages and comments, but you never see, you'll hear one loud boo over 1,000 cheers. You know what I mean? It's that thing. But like, it's just the messages you get every day about, like, I remember one I got, the woman lost her daughter in a car accident and she was watching the videos because it was what they used to do together. And that shit is heart-wrenching. Like, you know what I mean? That's like, and you kind of, it's them messages like them that kind of make you realise, like, you make a difference in people's lives. You don't think you do because you're just acting the bollocks on a camera phone, but you do make a difference to them.
I have one story like that stands out as well that I try to remember on bad days. Is a woman sent me a message saying that her daughter was going down for open heart surgery and she was walking along beside her showing her my videos on the trolley as she was going down, and it was my videos that were distracting her from the open heart surgery.
Fear, yeah.
And whenever I'm at a low or whenever things are getting on top of me or I'm hating social media or hating the abuse, I'll think of that and I'll say, well, that's only one story that I know about.
Exactly. Because people will react with disgust quicker than they'll react with, you know, praise or whatever, especially Irish people.
Yeah.
But we're not good at praising. Like, you know, even in my house, like, I wouldn't go home now after this and go like, Dad, I love you.
Yeah.
He'd get me like committed. He'd think I'm either dying or there's something really wrong.
What did you do?
Like, I don't think the man has ever said I love you, but we know he loves us, but he just wouldn't be comfortable saying that I love you. You know, it's just not for an Irish man. It's just where they're like, outlaws are a bit more in tune with their emotions nowadays, but like, back in my day, an old Roscommon farmer, like, wouldn't turn around and go, I love you.
What do you do to tune out then? What do you do to, what do you do to tune out from the world? What's your
goal? Go for a spin to the prom. Park at the prom. Get a coffee. Watch the water.
People
bring,
watch.
Bring Jamie off for a spin. Yeah, just things like that.
Who's
just
Jamie?
My little brother.
Okay.
He has a learning disability, but he's gas.
Right.
Jamie's the real celebrity, people say.
Yeah.
I agree. I agree 100%.
I only follow you for Jamie.
Yeah, yeah. But go out for a spin and sing songs, play our songs and sing to our top of our lungs and
yeah.
Get him an old McFlurry and just spin around. Things good. Like that.
Yeah. Good. You're blessed to live in Galway. Galway is a beautiful city.
Yeah, yeah. Because, like, it's strange when you're in another part of the world and you think, how far is the sea from us now? To how many thousand miles? And you're like, you feel kind of claustrophobic, like.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I live, like, just less than a mile from the sea. You know what I mean? It's weird. Yeah, we have everything. You have Salt Hill, which is the little escape. We have everything, really.
Have you any shows coming up?
In Liverpool, Nottingham, London in August.
In London?
London.
I'll give you a clue. You live there. Where in London?
The London Irish Centre.
Really?
Right next door to Amy Winehouse's former gaff.
Oh, brilliant. I was supposed to be doing a gig over there last October, but it fell through for various reasons. But I'd love to go over and do one in the London. Have you done it before there?
Yeah, yeah.
Is it amazing?
Yeah.
It's supposed to be.
It was strange though, because a lot of people got thrown out because they rushed the stage trying to get me to do a video 3 or 4 minutes into the start of the show.
But they were like coming up saying,
and then there was loads of cursing and shouting and everything. Yeah.
And what were they like, saying? Like, say hello to Mikey.
Yeah. And it was funny because I was standing on the stage holding a machete. So if the cops had come, they probably like were, you know, CS spraying me. You know what I mean? Because I came out with a machete. I was just standing there while these fellas were arguing with the, you know, keep it down, mate. Like, and then me standing there with a machete going like, all right, the show's been interrupted. I'll just stand here now with this machete.
The security must be like, what kind of show is this?
Yeah, 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 yeah. The surprise is... Do you know what I love, though? And it was the same in New York as well. We've done the shows in New York. People that have never heard of me and have no idea what's going on, and they come over after. Like the guy that was on the sound thing for our show in New York, he came over after and he goes, man, you got a fan in me. He was an African-American guy, but he was going like... Because I kind of pointed at him once or twice through the show, and I said, like, your man there at the sound office, he's probably going, what is this Irish mental just roaring in an accident?
Yeah.
And he goes straight away, when he came over afterwards, he goes, I get what you were doing. And yeah, that's the vote of confidence you need. Because people that have never heard you, all right, they see that I'm portraying a racist as a complete and utter fucking racist. The original Alf Garner thing, but the danger is then you have people that take it at face value and they agree with Michael. And they go, oh, Michael is saying what we're all thinking. And you're like, oh, Jesus, no.
No.
Like, I had that. We'd done a show in Keady or Katie or whatever they call it. And a fella come over to me after the show and he goes, I love your shows. I love what you do. I hate the N-words too. And I was like,
no, that's not what I'm saying.
Do you even react to that?
I do see that a lot.
You know what I mean?
I do see that a lot on some people's videos where, like you, you're trying to get your point across in a satirical way or a comedic way, and they watch the first 6 seconds.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they go, yeah, you're dead right.
Yeah.
I'm the same as you and I hate them.
Yeah,
and you're like, no. Watch the end of the video.
Where I destroy that very concept.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. They don't.
They'll only watch the first 6 seconds.
It's like when I done the one about, I was asked to do a video for Make Way Day about disabled parking spots being abused.
Yeah.
And they only got to the first few seconds
mm-hmm.
and then went mental. And it was the worst feedback I ever got from a video. That's why I was shitting myself doing the Down Syndrome one. Because I took the 1950s Irish view that disabled people shouldn't be let out because I'm uncomfortable around them and I shouldn't have to look at them.
Right.
If you're bringing your young child out in a wheelchair, put a tarpaulin over them so I don't have to look at them.
Oh my God.
And I will park in a wheelchair spot if I want because the hazard lights, they make you legally blah, 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 yeah, and so on. But they just, the concept was lost. And it's why Waterford Whispers headlines work.
Yeah.
Because some people, even you can't, like, I remember trying to explain to one or two friends, no, do you not get, no, I don't. They did,
Do you not get it? We're trying to highlight the issue here.
Yeah, some people don't have that.
Yeah.
So they can't see that. Whereas you'd read it and go, that's fucking very well done.
Yeah, he's hit the nail on the head there.
Yeah, whereas other people just don't get that. And you can't really teach that.
Yeah.
So.
Because most of my followers are female, I get the begrudging husband.
Most of mine are male.
I get the begrudging husbands coming up to me going, can I get a picture with you? Picture of you there, the wife's always following you. Or I have to fucking listen to you in the bed every night of the week.
That's what I get from angry wives.
But then at the end of the show, I'll meet the man at the end of the show and he'll say, jeez, had a great night.
Yeah, they were
dragged along to the show.
Yeah, yeah.
But at 11 o'clock, they go, jeez, that was brilliant.
You can always spot them in the audience, though.
You can
the
tell them.
Friends that were dragged along. Or the girl, that's worse, girlfriends or wives that were dragged along. They can't stand you because, like you said, he's listening to it every night.
Yeah.
And if they, God almighty, if their name happens to be Kathleen and he's a fan of the videos. Like, I've got messages from, like, wives called Kathleen and go, the man has my life destroyed. Like, every day it's Kathleen this, Kathleen that. And there's no one worse than a person that comes over doing impressions of you.
Yeah.
And they're reliving the videos and going, what did you say then after that? And you're like, I have no idea.
I don't even remember that video.
Yeah, I don't. I know. Like, I can barely recreate any of the videos. Like,
yeah.
Because I don't go, like, I don't type them up in a typewriter. I just think of a concept.
Is Kathleen part of the live show?
Yeah. I couldn't do it without that.
Yeah.
Because you need the straight man.
Mm-hmm.
You need it. Like, it's a fake interview kind of scenario. Two chairs. That's it. Okay. Two of us.
Yeah.
Two mics, two chairs. That's it.
It's a lovely feeling, isn't it? Winning those people over.
Yeah.
It's a lovely feeling when you're like, yeah, that was. I'm delighted now that I've changed your opinion.
Yeah, and that it went well.
Like, opened your mind a bit, Ian.
Like, I'm lucky enough, I've never really had a negative review. Like, even, like, I was panicking about one of the New York shows because we wrote the set 45 minutes before we started. Because it had to be a completely different set. Like, we're in America now.
Yeah.
Can't be going out about, like, Boris Johnson or whatever. So it had to be completely new. And I explained that to them at the end. I was like, thank you for blah, blah, blah. But, like, the nature of social media, you get it instantaneously. So people will be tagging people going, so how was he and stuff? And you're like, you're pure paranoid to go view all replies. But when you start, oh, he was brilliant and things, you're like, oh, thank God. And it's just, it's kind of that, like, okay, that was all right. That was, you know, I didn't do as bad as I expected. Like,
yeah.
But you're always panicky doing a new set or messing with stuff or tinkering with stuff because.
Do you think, can we get you up to Mayo to do the TF Royal Theatre again?
Yeah, definitely.
We'll have to get you back up.
Yeah, but for a bit of humour as opposed to.
Oh, definitely. Jesus, not. Yeah, we've.
Sometimes you get enough of the kind of. Yeah, the
doom and gloom.
Yeah. Tell us about your sad life.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, sometimes it's nice to just have a laugh.
Steve-O, I want to thank you for your honesty. I want to thank you, first of all, for getting up at before 2 o'clock in the day.
You're lucky I even did. I had a load of missed calls and everything. And he was like, are you lost? I said, I'm here.
I said, two minutes. This man is definitely not going to wake up this morning. But
No, I seen your message on Instagram, but I was getting out the door. I was like,
oh, stop.
And as you know, I can't text and walk, so.
You can't text and walk. No, but I appreciate your time and I appreciate your honesty and I admire you more than you know yourself because. I have very bad days and I have very low days and I have no problems. Do you know when I think about it, you know?
Yeah, but everyone's problems are their problems.
Yeah, I know. But you've had to deal with an awful lot and you've turned your life full circle. You could easily be drinking yourself silly under a bush every day of the week, feeling sorry for yourself and the whole world's out to get me and poor me. But to get up on a stage in front of 1,600 transition year students, whether it only syncs with one of them
or
16 of them, it's an absolutely incredible thing to do and an incredible gift and an incredible talent. And I'm delighted that John's family allow you to do that.
Absolutely. You know?
And fair play to you and fair play to them.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And Keeper Lit, how can people follow you?
Instagram, Facebook, the usual Sir Steve O'Timothy official. Don't ask me about the Sir. Just, it was an idea one day just to differentiate between my personal profile and my page. So.
Sir Steve O'Timothy official. Yeah. I asked somebody once, what's your ick? And they said, people who put the word official after their name.
Yeah. But you had to do that. I remember early days of verification.
Yeah.
I had just Sir Steve O'Timothy and Facebook, you had to put official.
Right.
I wouldn't verify it.
I have official because Alan Clark was gone. Alan Clark was gone, and everything I tried putting in was always gone.
Yeah, Sir Steve O'Timothy is gone on TikTok, so I have Sir Steve O'Timothy 1.
Who has Sir Steve O'Timothy?
Haven't a clue. Haven't a clue.
We'll have to send.
I must check that actually now, because I don't know.
We'll have to send the goons. Do you want to hear a good one about TikTok? Somebody reshared this video I have of Nidge. I did this video of Nidge pretending he was from Mayo, and he was shouting at this woman for checking the sheep. So yesterday I went on to TikTok and I saw this video and it had 60,000 views. And I was like, yeah, bollocks, that's my video.
Yeah.
So I went, well, it's lambing season. Maybe I'll reshare this video. So banged it up this morning, reshared it. Bang. Taken down for community guidelines.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's my video.
So my London one. It was on the driving through London one. I reshared it up on TikTok for the crack because the same thing, someone stole it. I put it up on Instagram as well because some page, Irish something, got 28 million views.
Yeah.
I was like, I'll put it up. I got 5, that's fine. But I put it up on TikTok and it was up near like 6 million views or whatever. Community guidelines. Dangerous activities.
What, driving past the Parliament in the car shouting and roaring at them? Yeah, well, it is fairly dangerous now. An Irish man shouting and roaring.
More danger for the Brits than for me. But yeah, it's annoying. There is a thing, a few pages on TikTok, and it's just all like 8 out of 10 or 12 of the videos will be my videos just reshared. And you're like, if I put that video up, it won't get a tenth of what you're getting. It's just annoying.
Yeah, it is.
Like, tag me in it.
Oh, yeah, at least tag me.
Yeah. Fair enough. If the odd time, like, someone just gets sent a video on WhatsApp, they don't know where it's from and they put it up, that's grand. But when people are constantly tagging you, telling them to tag you is kind of...
The WhatsApp demographic is a demographic we completely forget about.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
And they have WhatsApp, like, groups now, pages. Yeah. What's up? Oh, I forget the name of it.
We did a gig in Belmullet once, and I remember looking out into the audience and thinking, they're not TikTokers.
They're WhatsAppers.
And somebody said to me, they're WhatsAppers.
Yeah.
And it was the first time where it dawned on me, where, wow.
Yeah, because someone will send someone something and then they'll use the forward button and they'll send it to 12 other people.
And we have no way of knowing how viral we went on WhatsApp. Not a clue.
YouTube stats, you will.
Yeah,
but that's only YouTube stats. That's only if it's shared from YouTube initially.
Right.
But you've no idea.
But what they're doing now is they're downloading it from TikTok and sending it on WhatsApp.
Yeah.
And suddenly you're viral on WhatsApp.
Yeah. As long as they're buying tickets as you.
I got slated once. This is the last story now. We'll finish up. There was a friend of mine double parked at Ireland West Airport. And he had this big, massive BMW. And I took a video going into the airport shouting and roaring at this car double parked. It was double parked. He was gone to England.
Yeah.
The car was abandoned in Knock Airport. This huge 7 Series. And I took this video and I said, look at this bollocks, the way he parked here and throwing up on the curb and he doesn't give a fuck and blah, blah, blah. And I sent it to the owner of the car. He's the only person I sent it to. I didn't send it to anyone else. 2 days later, I was public enemy number one. You're only jealous. It had gone around WhatsApp, then somebody had uploaded it to TikTok, then it was gone completely viral, and I was a jealous bastard because I didn't own a 7 Series and I'd never own a 7 Series.
But he must have shared it then if you didn't share it anywhere.
He sent it to a few lads.
Yeah.
And then he was like, hey, look, Clark's in the airport, look at this video, bang. Gone completely viral. And it came full circle back to haunt me. And then I met him actually a few weeks ago and he says to me, you wouldn't believe, Clark, he said, the amount of people that said to me, did you ever tell that bollocks to take down that video? Do you know? Or did you ever send it to that prick for calling you out and double parking?
Yeah.
He's the only person I sent it to.
Yeah, I would have been like, I only sent it to you.
Yeah.
So you have created these problems. This is a buzz between us two.
Yeah.
And it's you that's created it.
But I was public enemy number one.
I would have burdened his car down to the cinders.
So, Sir Steve O'Timothy, official on social media, YouTube, give us an old subscribe button there.
Smash that button there, guys.
Smash that button. Steve O, thanks for your time and we'll hopefully see you in
Thank you so much.
In the big stage in Castlebar soon.
Bye, Jesus.
The Big News Coming Soon podcast is proudly sponsored by B.R.B. Homes. B.R.B. Homes is Ireland's number one award-winning manufacturer of factory-built homes. We take your home from start to finish. Our homes are A-rated and meet planning regulations. We build to your requirements and your budget. The cost includes your home being turnkey and our chartered engineer's fees. Please get in touch reviewing of our show homes a brochure, or for more information. Let BRB Homes take the stress out of your build. Check out brbhomes.ie.